It's 1900 UTC, and that means it's time for That's News to Me. I'm your host, DJ Marcus. Let's see what's happening in the world today. All right. Hello, hello. Welcome. It's April 1st, 2021. And typically, this is April Fool's Day when you can't believe anything online, but or just in general, lots of good pranks. Surprise, surprise, though, a global pandemic that's lasted more than a year has really ripped away anybody's playfulness. I haven't heard of any April 1st, April Fool's Day pranks going on. I did think it was a really cool feature of the world, of society, at least in the U.S., so I hope it comes back once COVID goes away, but for now, I guess we're just going to do the news. So we're going to go ahead and start up. We're going to do the way we always do. We're going to start with our world news.
World news.
That's right. So first call, dire situation in North Korea drives a collective exit of diplomats. So Russia has a lot of diplomats in North Korea, if you didn't know. And Russian diplomats are fleeing North Korea and have described acute shortages of medicines and other basic goods in the country, indicating a crisis fueled by one of the world's strictest quarantine regimes amid the coronavirus pandemic. In a letter posted online on Thursday, employees of the Russian embassy in Pyongyang described the collective exit of foreign diplomatic staff that they predicted would unfortunately not be the last due to unbearable conditions in the North Korean capital. Sorry, just in the microphone. Try not to be so breathy like I was yesterday. It's possible to understand those leaving the North Korean capital. Hardly anyone, everyone, can stand the unprecedented total restrictions on individuals, the sharp deficit of essential goods, including medicines, the lack of any possibility to resolve health problems, members of staff at the Russian embassy wrote. There were hardly any diplomats left in Pyongyang, the embassy letter said, tallying the total internal presence in North Korea at 290 people. All but three foreign aid workers had evacuated the country as of last December, according to reports. And last week, the United Nations said it had no international staff members left in the country. So, yeah, it's pretty sad. So we'll see how that turns out. All right. So move over to Europe here. Dutch PM Rutte faces no confidence vote after blunder. So Dutch PM Mark Rutte was facing the biggest challenge to his, I think it's Rutte, it's R-U-T-T-E. So maybe I'm wrong, but I'm going to call him Rutte until, unless somebody can fix it, helps me out. Was facing the biggest challenge to his leadership in a decade on Thursday, as opposition parties tabled a no confidence motion and accused him of lying over remarks he made about what he discussed during talks to form a new cabinet. Rutte was a clear winner of March 17th's parliamentary elections, seen as a referendum on his handling of the coronavirus pandemic crisis. Losing a vote of confidence would cripple his ability to form a new government. The no-confidence vote to take place later in the day after Rutte appeared in Parliament to explain why he had told reporters he had not discussed a political appointment for one specific lawmaker during confidential formation talks, when it later emerged that he had. Rutte denies having lied. I didn't lie. I acted honorably and in good conscience. So, this shall be interesting. Anyway, I thought there was something more to it, but apparently it's as simple as, no, I haven't made a cabinet appointment. Oh, yes, I have. I don't know. Maybe I'm missing some nuance there. You can read the full story at Reuters.com if you want, but that's pretty much 90% of it. So Navalny, we've been talking about him. He's been making a lot of noise because he's imprisoned in a harsh Russian prison. Allies of Kremlin critic Alexei Navalny said on Thursday he had lost 8 kilograms in prison before even beginning a hunger strike, something they blamed on guards depriving him of sleep, even as the prison service defended his treatment in custody. Navalny, one of President Vladimir Putin's most prominent critics, went on a hunger strike on Wednesday to try to force the prison holding him to give him proper medical care, what he said was acute pain in his back and legs. The opposition politician, whose release the West has demanded since last week, that guards were waking him up every hour at night, and that his appeals for medical care were being ignored. So, yeah, they just are now saying he lost a bunch of weight before he even started the hunger strike. So, hopefully, he is able to get medical treatment and be treated humanely. Political prisoners often suffer so bad. The United States has some political prisoners that are just awful. You know, Mahmoud Abu-Jamal, I think is his name. He's been a political prisoner for decades, and being locked up for that long really messes with people's minds. And so it's just really sad. Political prisoners, man, don't become an enemy of the state. I love you, government. Please don't harm me. Please don't put me in prison. So yeah, watch what you say, or at least who you say it to. All right. Speaking of watching who you say what to, the story comes to us from Al Jazeera. Aung San Suu Kyi has new charges, so she's not just a radio smuggler anymore. More serious charges against Myanmar's deposed leader could potentially lead to a prison sentence of up to 14 years. She's been charged with breaking a colonial-era official secrets law, her lawyer said on Thursday, the most serious charge against her. Myanmar has been rocked by protests since the army overthrew her government on February 1st, citing unsubstantiated claims of fraud in a November election that her party won. In a new measure to stifle communication about the turmoil, the junta ordered internet service providers to shut down wireless broadband services until further notice. Reuters news agency reported, citing telecom sources. Suu Kyi and other members of her National League for Democracy, or NLD, party have been detained since the coup, and the junta had earlier accused her of several minor offenses, including the walkie-talkie importation thing. Her lawyers say the charges she faces are trumped up. Conviction under the law can carry a prison sentence of up to 14 years. Myanmar has been rocked by near-daily protests since February 1st. On Thursday, protesters again took to the streets, defying a security force clampdown. Activists burned copies of a military-framed constitution in protest against Senior General Min Aung Hlaing's power grab. I think we have one other Myanmar story. Yeah, let's jump over here to this other Myanmar story. At least 43 children have been killed by armed forces in Myanmar since the coup started, according to rights organization Save the Children. The group said the Southeast Asian country was in a nightmare situation, with the youngest known victim just 6 years old. A local monitoring group puts the overall death toll at 536. Meanwhile, ousted leader Aung San Suu Kyi, we covered this already. Well, let's see if there's anything new. Witnesses say the armed forces have attacked people at random on the streets, and some people have even been killed in their own homes. The family of a 6-year-old girl, Kin Myo Chit, told the BBC she was killed by police while she ran towards her father during a raid. We had a whole special story about her. It was really sad. They kicked the door open to it, her sister said. When the door was open, they asked my father whether there were any other people in the house. When he said no, they accused him of lying and began searching the house. That was the moment when Kin Myo Chit ran over to her father. They then shot and hit her, the sister said. And then they kind of go through several of the other people who've been killed, children that were killed. Just in general, it is bad news in Myanmar. It's really sad because this is what people are afraid of when a military coup or a military dictatorship takes over, and it really seems like the world's reaction to this is very hands off, and it's disturbing because this is the kind of stuff that a free world, a free society, a peace loving society should be fighting really strongly against. Kind of like what's going on in Africa. A lot of countries in Africa are suffering with this stuff. Well, not a lot, but at least 4 or 5 that we talk about quite a bit. All right, let's keep on moving. South Korean authorities are facing a backlash for relying on global vaccine sharing scheme COVAX for a bulk of its COVID-19 shots as shipment delays threaten to slow the country's inoculation program. Once praised by the World Health Organization for its decision to procure vaccines through the global scheme, South Korea is now facing criticism at home as the government scrambles to meet the supply shortfall. South Korea, Indonesia, the Philippines, and Vietnam are among countries to be hit by shipment delays to vaccines they had been promised following export curbs by manufacturing in India. In February, South Korea slashed its first quarter vaccination target from 1.3 million people to just 750,000 due to adjustments in the supply timetable of doses of AstraZeneca's coronavirus vaccine. The latest COVAX shipment distribution announced earlier this week announced it would only receive 432,000 doses instead of 690,000, and delivery would be delayed to the third week of April. It's the second time that South Korea's vaccine rollout has been hit by a delayed supply from the scheme. So in general, people are upset about this. South Korea reported 551 cases on Wednesday, bringing the country's total to 103,639, with 1,735 deaths. Despite international plaudits, I'm not sure what that word, how you're supposed to say it. Anyway, some, like lawmaker Lee, said the slow rollout raises doubts about the government's plan to reach herd immunity this year. With just 1.5% of the total 52 million population vaccinated, it is questionable with current supply when we will ever reach the herd immunity. Yeah. Really sad. It's kind of that, we talked about it before, it's that spot where, surprise, surprise, the world talks about wanting to be collaborative and work together, but when push comes to shove, people turn in and are selfish, or countries are selfish. So it's a little unfortunate. All right. Well, let's talk about something that's not death and destruction before we talk about more death and destruction. London-based amateur trader Amy Lee wasn't sure whether to buy shares in Deliveroo's stock market debut, but decided eventually to take the leap, swayed by ad campaigns on the food delivery company's app. "I took a gamble," she said. "It was my own fault, but I think I was swayed by the thought surely Deliveroo wouldn't advertise a bad product to their customers." Lee and others like her, who were allocated shares worth a total of £50 million, are nursing paper losses after Deliveroo shares plunged as much as 30% on the stock exchange debut on Wednesday. The fall sliced £2 billion off initial valuations as a blow to Britain's ambitions of attracting fast-growing tech companies to London. Deliveroo had dubbed its campaign Great Food with a Side of Shares, but things went wrong even before the IPO. Several asset managers shunned it, citing concerns about gig economy working conditions and corporate governance. Many amateurs discussing the matter on online Reddit forums cited similar reasons for steering clear. Since buying £250 worth of stock, Lee has done more research and now says she is gutted to have given her money to what seems to be another greedy tech company lacking social value or drive to things differently. She can't sell until April 7th because of rules around conditional trading, a practice customary in London's IPOs, until the shares settle, usually a week. Why? I don't know. Anyway, sorry, I thought this was going to be about Deliveroo's IPO, and there is no debacle, it's just their values are bad. So, sorry about that. I do have a bit of a longer song today, so don't worry there. I'll make it up by having a good song, or at least a song. France has banned alcoholic drinks in public spaces in a hope to curb
COVID-19. Get the news over with. I want to hear the music.
I know. We'll get there. Alcoholic drinks will be prohibited in French parks and other outdoor public spaces as part of the new limited nationwide lockdown to stem COVID-19 crisis, Prime Minister Jean Castex announced Thursday. Addressing the National Assembly, France's lower house of parliament, Castex, also said, he said authorities would be quick to disperse groups of more than six people on riverbanks or squares. And unreservedly condemned people who had not been respecting the rules after images of beer-swinging crowds on riverbanks under spring sunshine in cities like Paris and Lyon. Meanwhile, prosecutors should systematically probe organizers of clandestine parties for putting the lives of others in danger, he said. So we've just got a few seconds before this song starts up. When we get back, I've got a cool story about a death truck and some more international news. But before we go, just know the UK study has said that fasting during Ramadan is safe in a COVID-19 pandemic. Feel free to celebrate Ramadan, even though you're going to be kind of isolated. Feel free to celebrate it. All right, this song I think is called Superman's Dead.
Do you worry that you're not liked? How long till you break? You're happy 'cause you smile, but how much can you break? An ordinary boy, an ordinary name, but ordinary is just not good enough today. And now, thinking why,
Superman's dead. So let's go ahead and keep on and keep it on. So that death truck. This is a long read from The Guardian, so we'll just go over a little bit of it. But on the southern outskirts of Guadalajara, early in the morning of September 15th, 2018, a large container, the type normally attached to a lorry, sank into the soupy ground beside a rutted country road. The refrigerated container could store up to 18 tons of material, cooled to negative 40 C. Across its white exterior, a cartoon polar bear in a blue work shirt smiled and gave a thumbs up. A container like this was a common enough sight in the neighborhood of Tlamaluco de Zuniga. What attracted attention was the smell. Sitting there, slumped between the cornfields on one side and dilapidated concrete houses on the other, it gave a thick, cloying odor. Some said it reeked of rotting cabbage and fish. Others mentioned putrid meat, but they all agreed the container exuded death. The container had been there since 7:20 p.m. the previous evening, and by the morning it had drawn a crowd. About 100 people assembled at the edges of the path or peered out of their houses, grimacing and covering their noses with t-shirts. The state police cordoned off the area, and officials wearing boxy suits mumbled into mobile phones, describing scenes to their superiors. The most credible theory was that the container was full of dead livestock. That would explain the smell. Then why had the local press come to take pictures? It had to be something worse. Tlajomulco is one of the most violent neighborhoods in Guadalajara, the capital of Mexico's Jalisco state. Just a month before the container turned up, authorities had discovered three mass graves a couple miles away. Scores of bodies, many of them mutilated, had been brought to the surface. This was just the latest outrage in Mexico's brutal drug war. The streets had become a convenient place to dispose of the bodies. As the day wore on and the temperature rose, the smell from the container became suffocating and the crowd grew larger. As a viscous liquid oozed from the cracks in the back door, the crowd turned angry. "Get it out of here," they shouted. "That container is full of bodies." To their horror, they were right. Concealed behind the polar bear's anodyne smile lay 273 corpses. Still, what they did not suspect was that it wasn't the drug cartels who had brought this grisly cargo to their doorstep. It was the state government. Holy cow. this is great writing. Anyway, if you want to, you can definitely check out the full story. It is a long read, but it's totally worth it. And it's over at theguardian.com. And that's all I got to say about that. All right, so let's keep on moving. We don't have a ton of time. We've got about 7-8 minutes to go. So let's wrap it up. Chile is closing borders and ratchet up controls in April as coronavirus cases are soaring. Chile will close its borders for the month of April to slow the spread of coronavirus and stop the influx of variants, health officials said on Thursday, as cases continue to soar despite one of the world's fastest vaccination rates. Chile has already inoculated more than 35% of its population, according to a Reuters tally, but cases have nonetheless spiked in recent weeks following the Southern Hemisphere's summer holidays. On Thursday, the country reported 7,830 cases of the virus, its highest single-day tally since the pandemic began in March 2020. The soaring caseload has prompted health authorities to place much of the country under lockdown to ease pressure on urgent care wards. Chile's tallied more than a million cases of the virus since the pandemic struck last year. So this is sad. Sorry, I'm having to start and stop a lot. My allergies are bad. We've got high mold and tree pollen. Lots of tree pollen out today. And I've been having to go in and out to do laundry, and I had to go into the office. And anyway, blah, 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 blah. So kind of pretty neat. Communist-ruled Cuba is going through its worst economic crisis in decades, and yet the island may be about to become the world's smallest country to develop its own coronavirus vaccine. Cuba's economic crisis is so severe that the country currently faces shortage of essential goods such as rice and paracetamol, or like Tylenol, but it may become a success story in the fight against COVID-19, as two of the 23 coronavirus vaccines in the final stages of testing around the world are Cuban. Cuba began vaccinating tens of thousands of healthcare workers with the second COVID-19 vaccine on Monday, even though it has yet to complete clinical trials. Last week, Cuba started vaccinating 150,000 healthcare workers with its Soberana 2 vaccine that is still in the third phase of clinical trials. In order to have our sovereignty, we need to have our vaccine. In 9 months, we developed from an idea to a vaccine to be put in phase 3 clinical trials, said Vicente Varez of Cuba's Finlay Health Institute, describing the speed of the country's jab development as incredible. And there's a video there for it, but this would be a great win for Cuba, I think, and it would be a great, it'd be neat to see just because it's like, hey, way to go, little communist country, showing the world how it's done. All right. I'm all over the place now. Sorry about that. Yes. All right. Focus. Violence in Cameroon's Anglophone crisis takes high civilian toll. Worsening violence in Cameroon's Anglophone regions is taking an increasing heavy toll on civilians, with renewed attacks against schools and a spate of incidents involving improvised explosive devices and extrajudicial killing documented in recent months. These attacks are the latest escalation in the nearly 5-year conflict between government, security forces, and armed separatists, which had displaced more than 700,000 civilians and forced another 63,800 across the border to Nigeria. Overall, the UN estimates 3 million of the 4 million people in Cameroon's northwest and southwest have been impacted. The Anglophone conflict began in late 2016 when government security forces used lethal force to put down peaceful marches by lawyers and teachers protesting against perceived marginalization by the country's majority Francophone government. In response, more than 30 armed separatist groups formed a fight for an independent nation they called Ambazonia. A self-declared interim government of Ambazonia also emerged and is run largely by Anglophone Cameroonians living in Europe and the United States. Separatists are known locally as the Boys, consider themselves restorationists or freedom fighters. Representatives from the Cameroon government refer to them as terrorists in public statements. At least 4,000 civilians have so far been killed in the Anglophone regions, a toll that surpasses that of the country's far north region, where Boko Haram has been waging an armed campaign since 2014. In the first years of the conflict, there was a clear cycle of violence, according to Chris Fomayuha, a senior associate and regional director for Central and West Africa at the National Democratic Institute. Every time the armed groups attack, the military and someone in uniform was killed. Then the military goes into that vicinity or neighborhood in pursuit of the boys and mows down civilians. However, during the past year, the number of clashes between separatist groups and security forces has declined. There's been an uptick in attacks against civilians, according to data collected by the UN and the Armed Conflict Location and Event Data Project. The names of projects and official groups in Africa are so long. It's very interesting. Just something I noticed. There's this conflict, and it's just going on and on and on. Once considered a beacon of stability in Central Africa, Cameroon is struggling to respond to an influx of more than 200,000 refugees in its east, Adamawa, and northern regions from neighboring Central African Republic. In the far north region, there's been a spike in attacks carried out by Boko Haram, and the International Crisis Group has documented rising ethno-political tensions after controversial 2018 presidential elections pitted ethnic Bulus, to which long-running President Paul Biya belongs, and the closely related Beti people against Bamileke people, to which Biya's main opposer Maurice Kamto belongs. The state of fragility of Cameroon as a state has grown exponentially for 5 years. I don't see an easy outlet in the short to medium term unless a political settlement is arrived soon. So, anyway, I just thought it was very interesting. There's a lot going on in Cameroon. Check it out. And it was interesting because I didn't realize that English, like the language you spoke, would be such a big deal. But, I mean, it kind of is. So that's kind of neat. All right, we only have about a minute left. So I'll just run through some of these remaining things. And I'm sorry that last part of the show was so disjointed. UK police officer convicted of belonging to neo-Nazi terror group. A British police officer has been found guilty of membership of a banned neo-Nazi group. Metropolitan Police have a photo of this guy. So his name was Benjamin Hannum, and he was 22 and a probationary police constable. In the U.S., this, I wanted to give more attention, but we just don't have the time, and I feel like maybe we'll do a special U.S. edition of News to Me soon. Overwhelmed and underprepared, U.S. authorities are releasing migrant families on the Mexican border without notices to appear in immigration court, or sometimes without any paperwork at all. Time-saving moves that have left some migrants confused. So, yeah, they're just dumping them off at the border or at a border crossing. It's wild. There's a lot of U.S. news we didn't get to, but happy April 1st, everybody.
Well, that sound means that our time's come to an end. Thanks for listening. I'll be back tomorrow and every weekday, Monday through Friday, before the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe at 1900 UTC. Talk to you then.